bright in my eyes or I'm just dim this morning?
Can it be both?
Love you, my frenemy. You're the best. Let's pray together, please. Father, thank you for this Lord's Day. May you bless as we meet together. May this be a profitable morning, we ask in Jesus' name. You may be seated. Jeremiah 29. Jeremiah 29. Everybody find it? It's in the Bible someplace. Let's stand together, please. So almost everybody was here last week. How many captivities are there? Were there? The ones that impact you reading the Bible, how many? And the first one was the upper class and a prophet by the name of Daniel. The next one, 598, was a prophet by the name of
Ezekiel.
The middle class. And lastly was
Jeremiah.
Now, Jeremiah prophesied during the entire time. He had to see the best king that Judah ever had, Josiah. And debacle, debacle, and debacle after that, including the great weenie of history. And that's an old phrase. I don't know what you call him today. Zedekiah, the greatest weenie. Do you know what a weenie is? Look at me. Do you all know what a weenie is?
Yeah.
No matter what you do to them, you push them, and they just bend. That's Zedekiah. By the way, he knew what was right. I said it last week. Mike Hall said it. And you better hear it. He knew what was right. He knew how to save his people. And he would not do it. And therefore, by the way, it's prophesied, and I forget which. It's prophesied in Ezekiel or in Jeremiah. And then it happens. You find it in Kings and in the prophets. The last thing he saw, his children murdered right in front of him. And then they put out his eyes. That's Zedekiah. Chapter 29, please. Now, these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent into Jerusalem unto the residue of the elders, which were carried away captives, to the priests and the prophets, and to all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. So Jeremiah is writing from Jerusalem to Babylon during this period of time. It says, after that, Jeconiah, the king and the queen and the eunuchs and the princes of Judah and Jerusalem and the carpenters and smiths were departed from Jerusalem. This would have been Ezekiel's captivity, that middle class group, 598. So, basically, he sends a letter. It even gives us the guy's name, Elasa. And it tells you also, in the latter part of verse 3, that Zedekiah was also sending some sort of a letter to the king of Babylon. So otherwise, got one messenger, you know, sorry, you didn't have text messaging, no email, you know, let's not be stupid. So one guy's going back, he's going to the king, send it to the people too. So that's the letter, verse 4. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. So he basically answers a question in light of the controversy. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives, whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem unto Babylon. Then he gives them, summarized way, three commands. I have them written on the board. The first thing he tells them to do, verse 5, build you houses and dwell in them and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take you wives, beget sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands, that you may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. So his first command is?
Live your life
fully like you normally would. As I said, I think to Jim, Jim was very pessimistic last week, and I don't know why you would be pessimistic. No, you said this word, Jim. And that's just pessimism on steroids. I don't disagree with you a bit.
Yeah.
I don't disagree a bit about being pessimistic or optimistic towards this country. And I'm going to say why. Because Americans cannot think. By the way, have lunch with somebody like I did yesterday and talk to them for 30 minutes about chaos theory. And then come to me and tell me if you know how to think. And the butterfly effect. And those kind of things. By the way, the average American cannot, they just can't think outside of the biggest problem America faces today, which is, in Ralph Warren's opinion, you can use different language. Let's use different language. You all get that?
Yeah.
Everybody's got that. That's our problem. All you got to do, come on, turn on the news. By the way, don't talk to me about conservative news. Please, don't lie to me, because they're doing the same game. Everybody's playing this game. Groupthink, tribalism, us versus them. And guess who the us is? The good guys. Yes. Neo-Marxism. And we'll come back to this question here in a little bit. All right, let's continue. All right, then he goes ahead and says something else in verse 7, which has two basic concepts. Seek the peace of the city. And one thing when you read the Old Testament, you have to keep in mind a simple principle. We don't think this way in America, but in the ancient world, most people thought the big city you were in, city-state idea, Jerusalem and the whole country. So we don't really think Washington, D.C. Fact is, most of us would rather Washington, D.C. go away. But that's how they thought. Big city. So he says, wherever God puts you, that city, that country, guess what you do? You seek the peace of that city. And then he has that great text, of course, theologically, whether I have caused you to be carried away captives. Pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof shall you have peace. That verse is probably the greatest verse in the Old Testament on the subject of where we live today. Because we do not live in any kind of utopia. And friend, the kingdom is future. We're not going to bring the kingdom in. I'm sorry, you're not going to bring, you know, without Jesus, you're not going to have a kingdom. No kingdom without a king. Verse 8 says, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets, whether you're a Biden supporter or a Trump supporter, they're both liars from beginning to end. Quit listening to the lies and the hate. I found out that Biden is trying to save democracy. By the way, at the same time, Democrats all over the country are trying to, listen, exclude Trump from even being on the ballot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Definition of democracy, you get to vote.
Right, a free election.
There is no free election. By the way, there's not a free election on the Republican side either. Don't get too carried away. I mean, if any of you voted for who's even going to be, you know, money controls too much. But that's another story. Now, there's my cynicism, Jim. I get real cynical about the money games.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. He says, that are in the midst of you, deceive you. Don't let them deceive you. Neither hearken to their dream, to your dreams, which you cause to be dreamed, for they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, saith the Lord. So Jeremiah is writing a Joel Osteen letter to Babylon. Your best life now, right? Verse 10. For thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you. So you're going to be there 70 years, no matter what your idiots are saying. All right, so they're in between. I call this being a strangers in a strange land and the rule of law. We're going to skip everything on the front page and move on to the middle. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this time in Christ's name. All right, look at the second page of your notes, please. I am an excellent artist. Looks just like the picture.
You forgot the bone.
Got to put a little boat right here. Little sail on top of the boat. Something like that. Little terrible boat. It's about to capsize. All right. I want to ask a question.
This is a steamboat, not a sailboat.
I don't know what it is. I think whatever that is is what it is.
It looks like Snoopy on top of the house.
Kind of looks like the Cat in the Hat, maybe. I don't know. All right, so let's see if we can get everybody's attention for 30 seconds. Everybody in this room that is alive and breathing now knows about the debacle that happened weeks ago with the president of Harvard, president of MIT, and the president of University of Pennsylvania. Two of those presidents have now resigned. So I'm going to ask a question. Anybody in this room may raise their hand, but if you don't know, don't raise your hand. How many of you know about the academic background, outside of you, of any of these three presidents? Meaning, should they have been, by the way, MIT is considered like the geek of the geek place. Wouldn't you assume a president of MIT would also be, by the way, she is. She is a top flight geneticist researcher of the highest level. What about Harvard? When we found out that she couldn't actually even write papers and she had to steal people's stuff. This is not make-believe, folks. But what's the real problem? The real problem is this, and here's my question. What we've really been talking about is the rule of law for weeks. And it all started, by the way, everything I have said, would you believe everything I have said started from me reading Numbers 15? When God says one law for the people that live here and for the people that come through here. We only have one set of laws. We don't have 40 sets. What was the real problem with, how about this? DEI equals just another form of racism. Well, you saw, look at me, three college presidents that could not condemn raping, murder, and couldn't even condemn people that were promoting it on their universities. Mm-hmm. Couldn't even say it was wrong. Now, if it had been a white racist, they could have condemned that person, which they should have. Do you understand why? Because what is your alternative to the rule of law? Raise your hand. If you don't have the rule of law, what else do you have? You have chaos. Well, that's one thing you can have. Let's see, Nancy, is there chaos in Haiti? Because you don't have the rule of law. You have no law at all. The other backup is this, which, by the way, her answers and the only answer she has, because she learned all of her education in what she calls political science, which is basically, let me translate from the technicalities to what you can understand. White people are racist. You say, I'm not white. Well, I'm sorry, but you are. In this case. And Republicans are most racist of all. I mean, that's just her research. Well, that's academic. That's deep. But her real problem is this, friend, tribalism. So I want to add, this is a historical question. Evan, I'm going to ask you because you're too young to know, experientially. So we'll see how your academics are. Do you ever remember a country called Yugoslavia?
Partially, yeah.
What happened to them?
They got absorbed into another country, I believe.
100% wrong, but yes.
Yeah, split into countries.
They did what? After the Communist Party fell apart in Russia, etc., and the dictator died, they reverted to
tribalism.
Thank you. And then all of a sudden you had a war first with the Serbians and the Croatians, and then the Serbians with this and this with that. And now there's all these, I mean, there's like, I don't even know how many countries are there now. They all hate each other. Do you understand? Because if, and I'm going to say this, I wonder if they're better off today with murdering each other or when they had a dictator. The rule of law, friend, if you don't have it, what do you have? Jim says chaos. Yep. Tribalism.
You can also have a strong dictatorship.
You can.
Where you have peace.
Well, you at least have no unrest because he will crush you if you do. And I'm of the opinion.
In the absence of war, not necessarily.
I am of the opinion. It's probably better off for some countries. Kagan?
No, the guy who Robert
I knew exactly what you were talking about. He writes all that stuff, yes.
Yeah. One of his books is on that topic.
By the way, George W. Bush departed from conservatism, but not in any way that most of us knew. Conservatives always said you cannot export what we have. Bush tried to do it. How'd it work? I'm asking a question. How did it work? Why? Because there are certain places that you have to strong arm things. Is that what I desire? See, what you desire, We're going to move on. In your notes, second page, I'm not going to teach on this, I'm just going to review. There is what's called a thin view of the rule of law. I think it's a minimal. I think it's very helpful. I don't think it is very will take you very far. And by the way, this is all under the point of influence. In a country like America, we have to do what we can to influence. By the way, not to get Trump elected, but to influence for a rule of law. Otherwise, we have tribalism. Whoever's in charge does what to the other group? Have you listened to Trump? Not to the Trump detractors. Have you listened to him? He says he's going to do this. I would recommend you believe him. So all he is another form of tribalism. Friends, I thought America was based on a rule of law where whoever's here, there's basic concepts that apply to everybody. Now, I know there's always never been utopia. That is the thinnest view, right at the waterline. It's what you face, and I have those in your notes. There are laws, one set of laws, not one set for one group and one set for another, which we have always struggled to get away from. And sadly, friends, our country has never lived up to this ideal, but it used to be an ideal. Today it's no longer an ideal. Now we have different rules for different people. As a Christian, I must hold to one set of laws. We talked about this. We'll talk about it a little later. They're obviously derivative. Laws don't come from the sky. Those laws are well known to all, established prior to their enforcement, agreed upon prior to their enforcement, and those laws are enforced fairly and equally. Obviously, there is then something under the waterline. That's what's called a thick view. These are technical terms that if you read in the whole philosophy of the rule of law, I prefer a waterline. It just makes more sense to me. You have, first of all, process laws. We talked about that last week. Let's see here. Let's turn to the second page, our third page, Deuteronomy 17:8. We've read some of the other stuff. But everyone look at me for just a moment, please. Everything I'm going to say, look at me, if you read these texts and you think, you're going to recognize in a modern farm, it's what America is. What you don't realize, this is not common. This is not normal. We owe a lot to the Hebrew Bible. Sorry. Not this. We didn't take this to here, but we took the ideas and brought them into our country and civilization. There are things that we just assume. Well, excuse me. We used to assume. Boy, can't always assume now. Well, you know what? I think we'll read the whole thing. Go back to the previous page. Verse 2. I just want you to see some of these broad concepts. Verse 2. If there be found any among you within my gates, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Obviously, this is Israel. This is not America. But the whole idea is something's going on. Look at verse 4. And it be told thee. Otherwise, the misdeeds come to your knowledge and to the knowledge of whoever. And thou hast heard of it. What is the next thing you have to do? Have you ever heard of this? No rush to judgment. Have you? Then why don't we practice it? All right. So just so you know, I actually believe this. This week, the number one stupid conversation piece all across America was Epstein's list being of people that met Epstein. One of these models, I don't know her name, don't blurt it out because I don't care her name. Campbell something, a model. She took a picture with him one time. She's part of the... Actually, she says, I take thousands of pictures of people. Somebody said, Bill Clinton. Do I like Bill Clinton? No. But just because in a deposition, Bill Clinton's name was mentioned, number one. Number two, and in there, listen, Jeffrey Epstein said to somebody else, supposedly, that Bill Clinton liked them young, has no bearing on Bill Clinton at all because we know nothing. That is third, fourth, and fifth hands. You have to actually go through a process. By the way, when I asked you, live your life in a godly way, and influence, what I'm asking you for is we influence in this country for right and right processes. Those are process laws. Just because you don't like, I don't like Bill Clinton. Does that make him guilty? I could say a lot of things, but I'm going to skip all of those. Let's keep reading. It says, once you hear of this, this becomes public knowledge. You have to inquire diligently, and behold, it be true. Oh. And the thing, what's that next word?
Certain.
So there has to be a level of certainty. By the way, we have a concept to call beyond a... Do you wonder where that stuff comes from? Mm-hmm. Do you have to have that in Russia?
No.
That such abomination is wrought in Israel. Verse 5. Then thou shalt bring forth that man or that woman which hath committed that the wicked thing into thy gates, even that man or that woman, and shall stone them with stones till they die. Now, obviously, this has never been one-to-one, but the ideas of a process. Verse 6, at the mouth of two or three witnesses. Now, we would add in modern jurisprudence, or in the modern world, not only eyewitnesses, but also evidence. He says, shall he be worthy of death, be put to death? But at the mouth of one witness, shall he, and he shall not be put to death. Verse 7, the hands of the witnesses shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterwards the hands of all the people. So thou shalt put the evil away from among you. Next page. Everybody with me. Does this sound similar to what we're supposed to be? By the way, it's different than the rule of law. It's really what supports the rule of law. Processes. It's one of the dumbest, funniest stories that I've ever happened to me, and I have to be careful now. I have to be careful because of this. Number one, some people don't have a sense of humor. So let me ask you a question. If I say Pastor Cork and I went out and he was smoking, do you know me? Mm-hmm. First of all, you know him too. My sense of humor is always stupid. So years ago, 20, 25 years ago, I said from the pulpit, yeah, my wife was out back smoking. Somebody in this church at that time saw a woman that used to work around here that smoked some, smoking out back. Oh. And at a distance, that was my wife. Now, Judy's still mad at me for saying that something.
Yes. You got caught.
But it was so obvious. By the way, I wouldn't say something unless it was so obviously not true. Friends, we have to have processes, not just for politics. I'm not talking about political or legal. I'm talking about life. I heard that so-and-so did such and such. What, are you a gossip? Answer the question. Are you a gossip? By the way, I have no opinion on anything unless I have more information than, oh, I heard. But I actually believe in the process. I actually try to practice the process. Boy, that's interesting. Not always successful. You say, why? Because there are certain people I don't like, so I would rather believe the bad. That's who I am, just like you. Let's continue. Verse 8. If there arise a matter too hard for thee in judgment, what do you do? Well, the latter part of the verse says, then thou shalt thou arise and get thee into the place which the Lord thy God shall choose, which in the future would be Jerusalem. And thou shalt come before the priests, the Levites, and to the judge that shall be in those days, and inquire, and they shall show thee the sentence of judgment. So this is also one of the assumptions, these processes. You also have, and I don't want to get into America because it's not important, but there's like lower courts, and then there's higher courts, then there's a supreme in a state, and then there's the supreme of the U.S. Do you think we just made that up on the way to Sunday school? That comes directly from the teaching of the Bible. You're going to run into problems you can't solve in Waukegan. So you have other people with more expertise, more information, more money, more power, more whatever. There's processes to all of this. Shocking. Well, goes on to say, let's go down to verse 12. Verse 11, we'll read verse 11. According to the sentence of the law which thou shalt teach thee, which they shall teach thee, and according to the judgment which they shall tell thee, thou shalt do. Thou shalt not decline from the sentence which they shall show thee, to the right hand nor to the left. Which means this, look at me everybody, there comes a day and a time, look at me, when you shut your mouth on earth. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to bring up Trump. Trump went to law to prove that the election had been stolen. You don't have to like what I'm going to say. I don't care. He lost every single time. At that point, any honorable person says this, on earth, I just need to shut up. By the way, Hillary, I don't know if she still accepted that she lost the election. Or, as far as that goes, I was here in 2000. I remember somebody else didn't accept that he lost the election. By the way, friends, I mean, this goes on forever. But there has to come a place where if this doesn't work and this doesn't work and this doesn't work, you know, the Bible says, when that judge speaks, you just need to shut up. That's the law. You say, what if it's unfair? Look at me in the eyes. There is a God who will sort things out in due time. Yes or no?
That's right.
There's ultimate justice, of course. Verse 12. And the man that will do presumptuously and will not hearken unto the priest that standeth the minister there before the Lord thy God or unto the judge, even that man shall die. Now, this is obviously Israel, but the idea being is he gets eliminated from things. You don't want to listen to what the ultimate judges say. You're not part of the group. You say, I don't like that. Well, it's what it says. Verse 13, why is all this important? And all the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Now, by the way, I don't think that ultimate justice always happens on earth. So democracy, I say in your notes, requires many underlying assumptions and ideas. Now, these are not at the waterline. These are down here under the water. But they're things that support the rule of law, the things that I think we're supposed to promote. An independent, impartial judiciary. I know Jim did because we talked or we texted back and forth. Did any of you know that there was a woman collected votes or names, got put on the ballot to run against Putin? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Does anybody know what happened to her? She just got kicked off the ballot. What's the moral of the story? Democrats are in charge there too. By the way, that's just what you do. But see, in a real country, we're to promote influence for things like this. Independent, impartial judiciary, innocent and proven guilty. That's just Deuteronomy 19, 17, Numbers. It's all through the Bible. The right to a fair, public, and speedy trial, proportionate and appropriate punishment. I was reading some of Putin's friends. I'm assuming you read this stuff. Is specifically his friends in Chechnya, which is really interesting that he likes these people. Their thing is this, Ezra, you oppose Putin, we don't just kill you, we kill your parents and your children. We wipe out your line. That's what they said publicly. Is that proportionate? There you go. Strong independent legal profession. Lawyer-client confidentiality, is these are kind of built into our system. One set of laws equally applied to all. And in my opinion, especially in our country, separate executive, legislative, and judicial powers. And, of course, we've already talked about a Judeo-Christian backdrop. Other things can exist, like arbitrary arrest, secret trials. Wow. And you know, even our war on terror has dragged us this direction, sad to say. Indefinite detention without a trial, cruel and unusual punishment, or no intimidation or corruption of the electoral process. Those are pretty tough things. By the way, it also includes these things, which we have talked about. I call, in the old days, they used to be called blue laws. And I would just call them, I think, better than for us today, moral ideals. This is what I taught on a Sunday night sometime in the last month. Nothing here is a shock to you. I'm not going to preach on this. Things like we're made in the image of God. So, folks, please look at me. When you walk out in the public, this is what I want you to influence every place you are. You treat people like they're made in God's image. Look at me in the eyes. See me? And you do not allow your politicians to treat people in different ways because it makes you feel good. Get them! Get them! You can't do that in a civilization. Do you realize there's a lot of people that are afraid we're close to a civil war? And you know where it comes from? People that say they believe the Bible, but they don't know any of it. And they don't know how to practice it. We allow the hate, I mean rage. I'm all for opposing policies. I don't like a lot of the policies, but that doesn't mean you have the right to hate people. Sure. And may I say it to you, it's going to be funny, hate speech. It's not necessary. Yes, ma'am.
When I'm teaching things at work, one of the things we tell, focus on the problem, not the person. You have to focus on the problem or you're not going to solve it.
By the way, politics has always been ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, there was wonderful things said about Abraham Lincoln. Folks, if you haven't read about Lincoln, you ought to get, you can get the cartoons of Abraham Lincoln. The normal cartoon of Abraham Lincoln was he was a big dressed monkey. He was stupid. And that's funny. Because stupid wasn't one of his issues. Well, I preached on this mostly on a Sunday night. Matthew 7:12, by the way, do your children know this verse? Look at me in the eyes. Do your children know this verse? I quoted this concept to my friend Phil Scott, which is an unsaved guy and has never been in a Bible-believing church in his life, and as far as I know, has never been in any church. And when I quoted him what I preached on Sunday night, here it is. You treat people as individuals and not groups. You treat people with dignity and respect. You treat people as you want to be. And here's Phil Scott, an unsaved guy. That's the golden rule. He learned that in the public school. These are the kind of things, by the way, these are what we ought to be promoting among people, as opposed to hatred. Why am I so opposed to Marxism? It's just another form of hatred, but it's very sophisticated hatred. Much more sophisticated than most of us recognize. I haven't added, Jim, something to the end of that list I'm going to teach the kids starting tomorrow in my Bible class. 1 Timothy 5:1. I think there's another concept that you need to treat people according to their station in life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't talk about that on Sunday night. I do think that's, have we lost that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You know, Grandpa Hall over here is more or less my age. Do you realize, for me to go up to Mr. Losey, he didn't like me to call him Mr. Losey, but he's old as my dad. How do you know? Hey there, Gene. Was that his name, Gene? I don't always remember people's names. Mr. Smith. I couldn't have called Mr. Smith his first name on life. Say what? I was taught that you treat people according to their station, within reason. Doesn't mean you have to walk in here and say, Master Chief Cavallis. We're not in the Navy. But in the, look at me, but in the right setting, mm-hmm. Yes. Hear me?
Yep.
I believe, by the way, I like Filipino culture, except when it gets to be, you know, there's like DJ and BJ, and there's like four different levels. I don't get all of that. But I do like respect. I think it's not a bad thing. What are they, Atong? Do you guys use them in your family, the levels? Deco, I can't remember all of them. All I know is like three or four of them. And then they have I had one family that went through the group, and then they had more kids, so it had to go through the group twice. I was totally confused by that. All right, lastly in your notes, what I call the thickest view. And friends, we're not even close. Jim, you talk about cynical. We're not even close to really what's far below the waterline, which are the things that will really support a civilization. And maybe, Jim, we'll never get back to this, but as Christians, we need to recognize this. These are the things. By the way, turn the next page. I'm skipping the one verse intentionally. First table of the law, by the way, deals with loving God. In your notes, I'm assuming everybody knows there are two tables of the law. The first table of the law is the most difficult in a country because we're not a Christian country. Obviously, in Israel, it was either assumed to be believers or you were believers. So there were two tables of the laws. There was, if you want to say it, loving God or your responsibilities to God, which is the foundation of everything, truthfully. And on the other side, loving people are your responsibilities to people. So you have four, you have six. I will say this, friend, without at least the right side, and there's a whole world of philosophy that I don't have time to discuss about, can you have the second group without the first group? Don't have time to discuss that. But everybody look at me. Do you like to live in a society where you go to the door and here comes a grandmother? Olola, abuelita, bisabuelita, and I, as a man, would always do what? Make sure I open the door for her, treat her with honor and dignity. Why? Because the Bible teaches us, honor thy father and thy mother. Which means if I honor them, I honor my grandmother, I honor your, you know, it goes with, you say, this is your dreaming, Pastor Warren. Look me in the eyes. What are you here for? Watching TV? Going on vacation? Here's what the Bible says to you. Live your life. Seek the peace where God has put you. I go back to what I said last week. Do you believe this will make a better society or a worse society? So you look at these six, except the tenth one. Obviously the tenth one, if you're an American, you're guilty. If you're a Filipino-American, you're triply guilty. That's the first criticism I've ever made of Filipinos, and I'm not referring to you. Coveting is just something outside of our, we just don't get it. Most people think coveting is a Christian value these days. And the more stuff I can accumulate, the better off I am. I'm not opposed to your stuff. Listen, don't oppose anything like that. I'm just saying this. Do you think this makes a better society or worse? So the thickest view, far below the waterline, is saying there's these commandments. And by the way, these commandments really just form the basis of all the laws in the Old Testament. Because when Jesus in Matthew and in Mark summarizes, he says, well, this is the first commandment, and this kind of summarizes the second commandment, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So every one of these, thou shalt not kill or murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness or lie. Just basic concepts. Wow. In your notes, I just answered the question at the bottom. We're going to conclude this morning. I asked the question, where in the world do laws come from? And that's one of our problems. So friends, let me drag this out of the way. We started 2 months ago, maybe longer, with the rule of law. That's a thin view. Underneath that, we also ought to influence all we can for processes to be biblical, honorable, kind of what we've always done historically, the best side of it, the moral ideals, where, can I say this? I want all of our children, man, do I want our kids just to know, walk out into the world and treat people with dignity and respect. Don't look at a person and say, oh, you're a woman, or you're a man, or this, all of this, by the way, race, you're cisgender white male. There's only one thing you can say worse than a cisgender white male.
Rich.
Well, rich would help. But there's another word, Christian. And we're actually starting to hear that among the left now. But here's my problem. Yes, people are going to say things about you. Don't return the favor. Treat people like they ought to be treated. That's The moral laws, that's kind of the way, the idea, not a law, it's an ideal. It's a way of living. It's a way of treating people. It's a way of honoring people. And then underneath all of that are these commandments. These, and basically, this supports these, and this supports this. What we're trying to do is hold on to this. Well, we've eliminated this, and we've definitely eliminated that. It's really hard to do. In your notes, we'll finish up with this. Where do laws come from? Well, first of all, God and His Word. And our laws in this country, the very first Sunday, if you were here, you don't have to trust me, you don't have to believe me. I actually prefer that you don't, for a change. Alfred the Great. English law pretty much comes from Alfred the Great, 700s. He tried to codify things and start treating people. He was really a nutcase. He actually used the Ten Commandments and brought it into what's called English common law. So much of our history goes way back into, 1400 years ago. I mean, roots. This is not religion. Roots. This is not make-believe. In your notes. Obviously, natural law are the laws of nature, and nature's gods. God, not gods. English common law, Declaration of the Constitution. You say, Pastor, are you a conservative? Yes, I don't think the Constitution should be changed. And if it is changed, it ought to be changed how? The process built into the Constitution, which allows us to change the Constitution. Because our forefathers knew, as things moved along, there's going to be little differences. We need to add or subtract, nuance a little bit. But we do it not by having judges in the Supreme Court. But by what? By actually changing it. There's something, and by the way, there's been some good amendments that we found were essential. The 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, because we had racism in this country, and we weaponized it against people. So our country as a whole went through a process to pass these amendments to eliminate the mistreatment of people. There is no perfect place. Conservatism, I am one. We believe in change. It's change according to the process, and we have a process. Now, I'm going to close with this. This is the whole, I could speak another month on this, no, much longer. I'll close with this. You see the three commands? Mm-hmm. Live a God-honoring, honorable life. Number two, influence. And number three, you say, Pastor Warren, I am so discouraged. Jim Duncan said he's very cynical. Now, I mean, Jim, I'm going to tell you that's not true, because I know Jim pretty well. You know what Jim is? Just like me. Look at me, everybody, in the eyes. From cynicism to hope. And you go do this. Sometimes I think, maybe we'll get somewhere. And then, back to my cynicism. What's the answer? Seek the peace. Look at me. Pray for the peace of the city. Why? Because in that peace, guess where we live? Where do we benefit from the blessings of our country? We're going to close this Sunday school differently. I need you. Back up here. Please. Pastor Cork is going to come and lead the song we started with. You know the song? Jim, this is where I get my optimism from. God. You pray and think, well, maybe God can give us a breath of fresh air. You never know. And by the way, Jim, but that doesn't make me pie in the sky utopia. What's the song, Tim?